It's Jobs Day Friday, early of a pandemic December, so how we doing, huh? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the fourth day of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So I made a bet with Mitchell Hartman in our news meeting this morning that he was not going to be able to sneak a little calculus into the story he was going to get assigned, which is, of course, as Mitchell does, today's jobs report. As a refresher, as you probably heard or read already, the economy added 245,000 jobs last month. The unemployment rate fell a tad to 6.7%, mostly, it should be pointed out, because something like 400,000 people left the labor force. Now, a 250,000 jobs, give or take, added to this economy would be pretty decent in a regular, not a pandemic recession month. But right now, it's actually kind of alarming because of how quickly labor market gains are decelerating, which makes this the part where I tell you that Mitchell won the bet. Here you go.
Having a month with strong job gains can still be alarming. The problem is, improvement in the job market is slowing way down. We were adding jobs twice as fast just a month earlier, in October. Economist Joseph Bruswellis at RSM Consulting explains this with, and I warn you, some complex math that I almost flunked in college.
What we call a first derivative, second derivative problem. First derivative looks strong.
The 245,000 jobs we added in November.
But the second derivative, that's the rate of change of the rate of change, is actually in decline. If that continues, you'll end up with an outright loss of jobs on a monthly basis.
So he's saying if employment growth keeps decelerating, we could be losing jobs by next month. And even if we keep up with November's pace, full recovery is going to take a very long time, says Daniel Zhao at job site Glassdoor.
Because we're 9.8 million jobs short of pre-crisis levels, at this month's pace, it would take us until 2024 to return to those pre-crisis levels that we had had.
And digging out of this unemployment hole is about to get harder, says Lisa Rowan at Forbes Advisor. She points to rising COVID cases and government shutdown orders, mounting business failures, and government relief about to expire.
A majority of people are feeling less comfortable than they did 6 months ago to make regular household purchases, and a vast majority of people are holding off on those major purchases like a home or a car.
The latest Forbes Advisor Ipsos poll finds half of American workers are now afraid they or someone they know will lose their job in the next 6 months. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This being a Friday, it is time for a look back at what the heck happened, jobs and otherwise. Neela Richardson is here. She's at ADP. David Gura is back as well. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let me go to you as the trained economist on the panel. I don't know, David, if you ever took calculus. I never did, and I surely would have failed.
I don't even know.
But Neela, to the point that Mitchell was making, and Joe Bruswellis as well, this idea that labor market gains are slowing, that seems to me to be perilous.
It is, and I was a math major, so
There you go. Yes. Okay, good.
Well, you know, our job gains peaked at 4.7 million jobs in June. And since then, we've seen this consistent deceleration every month to where we are now of about 245,000 jobs added. And why that's bad is that $10 million hole in the ground that we still have to fill. So it's not really job gains, it's job recovery.
Yeah.
We're not gaining jobs. We're recovering jobs. That's an important distinction. And Kai, I'm going to say one last thing that I'll support. Guys shouldn't pay attention to wages or the unemployment rate because the wage composition has changed. Low-income workers have been impacted more. That makes wages look higher than they actually should be. And unemployment rate is lowering, getting lower and improving because people are leaving the job market because of all these health concerns and remote school. So a very complex picture with the labor market right now.
Super complex. And I'm so glad you mentioned wages in that bit about low-income workers being forced out and thus pushing the wage appearances anyway higher. But David, let me get to Neela's point. She said $10 million hole in the ground. She meant 10 million job hole in the ground. Gets me to my premise at the open, right? How we doing? We're still not doing so good.
No, we're not doing well at all. And there's a lot to worry about. I mean, there are positive seeming conversations happening on Capitol Hill. It seems like Democrats and Republicans are talking. And once again, we're pushed up against this fiscal cliff. So maybe that's going to accelerate things. But to get to what Nela was just saying a moment ago, this is something that's being borne disproportionately by women, by minorities. We've seen so many women have to leave this labor force as a result of what's going on. And, more so than men leaving to have to take care of children who are not able to go to school. And then there's this overarching story as well. When this began, there were so many Americans who thought, look, this is going to be a temporary thing. Maybe I'm hearing that from my employer. I'm going to be able to get my job back in a couple of months. Here we are 9-10 months into this, and it's starting to become clear that's not the case for a lot of people. And I go back to what Jay Powell, the Fed chair, says over and over again. We are seeing a kind of fundamental reconfiguration of the economy and the labor market in particular. And there are many jobs in this economy that are not going to come back. And we're seeing glimpses of that in the data that we got this morning as well.
Right. So, Nela, talk to me for a second about the impact of this fiscal cliff that David mentioned that we've talked about on this program for a long time now, right? We are almost literally, not we, Congress is almost literally running out of time to get anything done.
Right. A lot of the media talk was whether this month's jobs report would actually move the needle on the stimulus package, a stimulus package that could help the economy weather the storm winter months where we're seeing a surge in COVID cases. Perhaps not 1 month of data is going to move Congress, but what will move Congress is running out of money and not being able to fund federal agencies. And that is the situation we are going to be in next week. So you might see a conflation of stimulus and the spending package put together, trying to eke out a deal that does both a little, funds the government and also pacifies those who want more stimulus. The question is this an appetizer or an entree? Are we going to expect more stimulus in 2021, or is this one and done and consumers and businesses are on their own to weather 2021?
Right. Well, David Gura, take it from there, right? Because no matter what happens this time, given the proclivities of Republicans in the Senate, it will not be as big as virtually every mainstream economist says it's going to be. So do you suppose that come January 20th, there's going to be another bite at the apple?
Well, that's what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is banking on. And, this is a bill, at least is what we know of it now, that's about a third the size of what Nancy Pelosi said that she wanted. It's like a $900 billion bill. So that is a far cry from what she had said earlier, what economists have been saying. And the benefits, the unemployment benefits would be smaller than Democrats said they wanted. And so you look at that and you wonder, what's the deal here? Is it a question of realism? Let's get this done now. Let's have the entree, as Nela described it, come January when things presumably will change. The tenor may change in Washington. And from that is a bit of optimism, I suppose. But, you and I have been here over many years as we've faced fiscal cliffs. And it's dispiriting that once again, we're talking about another short-term spending gap. But this is how policy is done in Washington, not just in the year 2020, but over the last decade plus. It seems like that's the way that budgeting is done. And it does seem like this is what Democrats have decided, that there's a way of kind of putting these two things together, yoking these things together, as Nela said. And I think that what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is banking on is that maybe they'll pick up these two seats in Georgia, and that's going to change the calculus. Let's get back to Mitchell once again, come January 20th.
Right. Calculus all over the show. Nela, super quick, what are you going to be looking for to let you know that we bottomed out in this recession?
Consumers hold the key to the economy. Wow. We've seen markets thrive because of Fed stimulus, fiscal stimulus earlier in the year. But at some point, the rubber has to meet the road in the real economy, and consumers hold the keys. Concerned consumers don't spend. They don't re-engage in the economy. And so consumer confidence will tell us if consumers are both willing to spend and able to spend. And that's what's going to drive the economy forward. Consumer spending is 70% of the economy.
It is amazing how much of this counts on the consumers. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Nela Richardson at ADP, David Gura as well. Thanks, you two. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Kai. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street, on this Jobs Day Friday. So look, stocks are going to do what stocks are going to do, right? Details, numbers, when we get there. There was a new survey out from Pew Research this week, a good and promising survey, it should be said, 60%, 60% of Americans now say they will get a coronavirus vaccine when they can. That is up from 51% just a couple of months ago. But it is still not enough of us getting the shot to get the pandemic under control. So what might get more people on board? Marketplace's Samantha Fields now on a public vaccine, public education ad campaign.
There's a saying in public health that vaccines don't save lives, vaccinations save lives. James Colgrove, a professor of public health at Columbia, says that means
it's not going to do anybody any good unless you get it into people's bodies. People have to be willing to line up and roll up their sleeves.
The key to getting more people to do that, he says, is trust. Right now, the nonprofit group The Ad Council and a group of experts called the COVID Collaborative are trying to raise $50 million for a public education campaign. Stephen Jumper of the digital creative agency Ghostnote says people who are hesitant will need to see data and hear from people they trust.
It's going to be important that trusted faces, advisors, and leaders in communities, both locally and nationally, are seen on camera endorsing this vaccine.
President-elect Biden and former Presidents Obama, Bush, and Clinton have all already said they'll do that. Experts say an effective campaign will also have to involve clergy, primary care doctors, and local community leaders, people who know and look like the people they're talking to. That will be particularly important in the Black community, says Thomas Leviste, the Dean of Public Health at Tulane.
Given some thought to getting together a group of African-American scientists who can speak to the community and say, as scientists, we have reviewed this and we are willing to take this vaccine.
For some people, he says, it might also take time and seeing the vaccine start to work in communities like their own. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
All right, so stop me, would you, if you've heard this one before? Actually, wait, don't, because you definitely have, and you've heard it on this program. Mortgage rates hit a new low this week. Freddie Mac says the average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage is 2.71%. That is, for those keeping track, the 14th record low set this year. And it's good news if you're a potential home buyer staring down ever-rising prices on the few homes available out there. But if you're looking to refinance an existing mortgage to save a little money, a new fee kicked in this week that might make you think twice. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
It's called an adverse market fee. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac started charging it this week on refinance loans they buy from lenders. And at least some of the half a percentage point charge could be passed on to borrowers. Marina Walsh, VP of Industry Analysis with the Mortgage Bankers Association, says that's to protect the companies from unpaid mortgage bills.
The current projection is that with COVID losses, it could be upwards of $6 billion.
Fannie and Freddie have been under government control since they almost went under during the financial crisis of 2008. And their top regulator, Federal Housing Finance Agency Director Mark Calabria, wants the companies to raise enough capital to return to shareholder control. David Stevens, a former Obama administration housing official, sees the fee as Calabria's way of speeding up that process.
If there was higher risk to these loans, that would be one thing.
But Steven says Fannie and Freddie already back most of the loans people would be refinancing.
And if you can refinance them to a lower rate, you're actually putting the borrower in a better position.
Steven says adding to the cost of refinancing undermines the Fed's efforts to stimulate the economy by keeping interest rates low. Could the incoming Biden administration nix the fee? Well, the FHFA is an independent federal agency, and Calabria has more than 3 years left in his term. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up,
always sounds kinder, gentler than the trill blade of an economy's math.
Austerity in verse. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 248 today, about 0.8%, finished at 30,218. The NASDAQ added 87 points, about 0.7%, 12,464. The S&P 500 lifted 32 points, 0.8%, 36.99. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow up 1%, the NASDAQ grew 2.1%, S&P 500 jumped 1.7%. Mitchell was telling us about the November jobs report and the sluggish pace of hiring. Workers in the bar and restaurant industry lost jobs last month, 17,000 of them. The Independent Restaurant Coalition says one in five jobs lost during the pandemic come from that restaurant sector. And of course, more shutdowns and it's getting cold outside. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. One area that does seem to have some bipartisan support in whatever it might be that Congress winds up doing is more money for the Paycheck Protection Program, those forgivable loans that were part of the CARES Act. So we've gotten Lori Stewart back on the phone. She is the president and CEO of Sound Community Bank up in Seattle. We wanted to see how PPP companies that her bank made loans to are doing and how that whole forgiveness thing is working out. Lori, it is good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. What a treat to follow up on PPP and talk about banking.
Well, let's do that, shall we? As there are, you know, machinations in Washington about maybe more relief and maybe more PPP, I want to talk about your experience with your clients who got PPP loans. Generally speaking, how are they doing now, you know, 9 months into this thing?
Well, generally speaking, they're definitely doing better than they would be doing without the funding. I think what's concerning, of course, to all of them is that in our market, we're not at stay-at-home, but mm-hmm. we're very close. If you can imagine, Northwest Washington and restaurants can only have outside dining in December. You know how well that's going. I think that gets to your earlier point that we're talking about what's the next phase.
Yeah, and honestly, nobody knows. Can I ask you about loan forgiveness? That was a key part of the PPP. There was some paperwork involved and some changing deadlines. What's your sense as a person running a community bank about how well that forgiveness part of this thing is going? Because that was key for a lot of the small businesses that took these loans.
Here's the good news. I think it's going better than we thought it would.
Okay.
And while it started slow and there's still guidance that needs to be clarified, mm-hmm. we're clicking along. We've forgiven about half of the loans that we've made. They are the smaller ones, Kai.
Yeah. Yeah.
That are getting forgiven faster.
Yeah, my favorite little factoid about talking to you is that the smallest loan you gave was $900. And I just have this vision of this person running, you know, the bike shop or the cheese shop or whatever it was that got $900, spending all this time filling out the paperwork trying to get forgiveness for a $900 loan.
Right. Well, and that's, I mean, one of the things that SBA say and we say as bankers is, you know, consult with your financial professionals, but the person with the $900 loan or the $50,000 loan is looking in the mirror at their financial advisor, right?
Right.
Probably
right.
Late at night.
I don't know, Lori, if you've been reading some of the stories in the national press. I think the Washington Post broke the story about some of these PPP loans going to really big companies in disproportionate amounts. And I don't want to ask you about the data, but I want to ask you about the mood as you were trying to get these loans out the door. It's my understanding that the bias initially was make the loan. It wasn't challenge the loan.
Oh, totally make the loan. And you're right. I've got a bank to run, so I have not mucked around in the data. But I think one of the things we have to remember is this was about jobs and payroll. And if I'm a server in, you know, this hard-hit industry of restaurants, does it matter if I work for a company whose payroll is 50 employees or 250 employees? Probably not in terms of, you know, feeding my family and paying my bills.
Scale of 1 to 10, how necessary do you think, as we sit here with case counts rising and heading into winter, how necessary do you think another round of PPP funding is?
I definitely think that another round is needed. I would like to see us prioritize small businesses,
yeah.
communities of color. I think there's still outreach and education to do there, so I'd like to see that first. But I also really worry about businesses that thought they were going to make it and now are really worried they aren't.
Lori Stewart, she is a repeat guest on this program, the president and CEO of Sound Community Bank up in Seattle. Lori, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks. Call me anytime.
We're going to end the program today pretty much right where we started it, jobs. As Mitchell was telling us, we are adding fewer of them every month, even as Congress can't decide whether to pass more relief or not. One of the reasons that Republicans are saying no is that they have started to worry again as a Democratic administration takes over that the government should be spending less money, a topic we have talked about a lot lately. Austerity, government belt tightening, and the risks of doing that during economic times like these. So on the theory that art sometimes offers more lessons than science, a poem now about austerity inside one company and what it meant for one person.
My name is Fred Joyner, and I am a poet and an information technology professional in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the poem I'm going to read is Austerity. If it were only that simple. But the cut always leaves someone on the block unwanted, unworked. What language fills the bottomless gut, the flesh that sells, cut away from the bone of debt? The language of cutting, a subtle lexicon, always sounds kinder, gentler than the trill blade of an economy's math. Soft sayings like human scale, like right sizing, like achieving efficiencies. Hide the blade. Hide the murder that pen and protocol make. Masked. So I started working on this poem in 2013 when I was laid off. I was pulled into a meeting. I was working for a nonprofit in DC, a large nonprofit. And it was all this kind of soft language, like achieving efficiencies and right-sizing the organization for our mission and all of this kind of thing. That's how it landed for me. And that's kind of how it hit me as a word in our lexicon. I think that I've been trying to write poems my entire life. Around college, I think, is when I started to really understand the power of words. But getting laid off definitely played a role in my choice to pursue more fully my passion as a poet and in the arts. At the time, my girlfriend and now my wife, you know, she encouraged me. She said, look, just do it. Like, go to graduate school and get your MFA. It's something you've always wanted to do. Just do it. We'll figure out the rest. It took me getting laid off for me to just really say, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I'm the poet laureate of this town that I live in called Carrboro, North Carolina. And I still write poems and publish and still do readings. And so it's really an honor to serve in that capacity.
Fred Joyner, getting by in Carrboro, North Carolina. This final note on the way out today, with airline miles basically useless as an incentive right now, air travel being what it is, what is a credit card company to do to get people to sign up? Well, one idea, apparently, is give them Bitcoin. The Bitcoin Rewards Visa credit card is coming in January, $200 annual fee, in exchange for which you'll get 1.5% of your purchases back in Bitcoin. Also, $250 in Bitcoin if you spend $3,000 on the card in the first 3 months. So just for some context here, $250 gets you 13 one-thousandths of a Bitcoin at the close today. All right, we're going, but here is your week-ending moment of economic context. It comes to us from Bill Spriggs. He's a professor of economics at Howard University. Had him on the show a couple of months ago, and he pointed out this morning, and I should say, this is in compliance with the policy of this program, that if we stop talking about this, we're going to stop talking about this. Professor Spriggs pointed out this morning that the unemployment rate for black men in this economy was 10.3% last month. Remember, nationally, it is 6.7%. The national unemployment rate for high school dropouts, by the way, 9% even. BJ Lederman does the music. Nancy Fragale is the executive producer of the program. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. All right? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.